Before we get started with today's show, I want to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, the Mina Kimes Show, featuring Lenny, her dog. Mina talks all things football with her unique brand of humor and insight. Her friends join each episode to talk about the NFL's latest storylines, along with her football-loving dog, Lenny, making frequent contributions. This week, Mina and PFF's lead draft analyst, Mike Renner, break down the best prospects on the offensive line and discuss the top-tier players from all three levels of the defensive side. Follow the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny as well as The Right Time wherever you get your podcast. Also, baseball is back and so are your favorite teams and players. Catch the best of the bigs all season on ESPN Plus with over 170 live MLB games featuring every star and every team in the league. Sign up now at ESPNplus.com/baseball. The Right Time with Bomani Jones is brought to you by Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more driven. Next week, for the first time ever, we're excited to bring The Right Time to a live audience. The day for the show, Thursday, April 22nd at 8 p.m. Eastern. I'll be joined by Dominique Foxworth and hopefully you. The taping will get posted on Friday morning as the next edition of Foxworth Friday for those who can't make it. Registration is required and space is still available, but it's free to join us on Zoom. Head over to bit.ly/therighttime422, all lowercase. That's bit.ly/therighttime422, all lowercase. Again, it's The Right Time's virtual live podcast with Dominique Foxworth on April 22nd at 8 p.m. Eastern. Register now at bit.ly/therighttime422, all lowercase. See you there. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. It is Foxworth Friday. Joining us now, I almost said Baltimore. You ain't in Baltimore no more. You done came up. Washington, D.C. Dominique Foxworth, what's going on, man?
Nothing much. Ain't nothing wrong with Baltimore. It's a wonderful little city. It gets compared to big cities often, and that makes us look bad when you start comparing us to New York. But it's a real fancy Pittsburgh is what it is.
Now, you know what Baltimore's problem is? And it's the same problem that St. Louis has here, aside from the like staggering racism, is that they used to be real big deals back in the day. Like, they had the Olympics in St. Louis once, right? Yeah, like it used to be a thing. And then it's not a thing, but then everybody has heard of it. And so then if you heard about it, because it got a dot, right? Yep. And then you mess around and you go there and you're like, why do you got a dot? But it's because the hype is largely built on what it used to be. And now it's cool for what it is, but not everybody should know about Baltimore. It should be like, yo, I went to this really cool little town, man. They got lots of places to eat and drink. It's by the water. The seafood is great, you know?
That's not fair, but it is fair. I mean, if people didn't hear about Baltimore, didn't know the name Baltimore, the expectations would be very different. And people would be, because Baltimore is, it's like a lot of nice stuff in Baltimore, but there are some major things that happened in Baltimore that put us on the map a long time ago that have people having high expectations. So you remember when the ESPN Zone came out? First one. In Baltimore, right?
Really?
In the harbor, we was like, ooh, in Camden Yards, like the first modern, like cool stadium, Baltimore. So everybody was like, oh yeah, Baltimore, that spot. Then you come down there, you're like, oh, it's not quite that.
Man, I will tell you this, my Baltimore story. I think this is the first time I had ever gone to Baltimore and I needed to rent a car because I was there for a wedding. And I got the car and this is like 06, 07. So I think it's 07. So it's a different era of GPS and not GPS on your phone. And I messed around and was on shortest distance instead of fastest trip. Oh, okay. And so fastest trip gets you on the freeway. Shortest distance keeps you on the surface streets. And I want to say I picked up the car from the airport and the hotel was downtown. It was on Baltimore Street, right? Can't remember which hotel it was. And man, after having watched all them seasons of The Wire, it was looking very familiar and not in the way that I found to be charming at all. And I had no solution to improve it. And like, it wasn't scary. It just looked like The Wire. Now, what was wild about Baltimore, though, is I'm downtown and every city kind of has a dividing line, right? And a lot of places it's freeways. Like in LA, it's north of the 10, south of the 10. Like that's where life changes. I don't know exactly what street life changes on in Baltimore, but I know I was downtown and I forget where I was going, but like one side of the street, it was in line with the hotel that I had gotten. the other side of the street, I was like, damn, is there a force field that's stopping y'all from coming over here? Because it's a completely different world and I can see it and hear it, but y'all not coming over here.
Yeah, I don't know what the line is. I mean, I think there's multiple different lines, but West Baltimore in general is considered like the Wire type of place. And you said Baltimore Street. All I could think about was in high school, Baltimore Street was like the nasty street. So like that's where us goofy high school kids would go down there and there'd be like the strip clubs that would let teenagers in. Gotcha. Like, so when you said Baltimore Street, I was like, yeah, it's a long street. But when you say Baltimore Street to 16-year-old boys, they're like, oh, okay. Maybe it's different now. But for me, when I was that age, that's all I think of when I hear Baltimore
Street. That is one of my favorite concepts is we be throwing out streets without intersections. Like streets aren't long. Like Crenshaw. Crenshaw is a notion, but it's a really long street. Like it's off of Crenshaw. That don't really tell me what I need to know. And let me tell you the best example of that in New York City, Fifth Avenue. Like you would hear about like Fifth Avenue and they talk about like the boy, the advertising boys off of Madison Avenue. Man, them things run all the way up to Harlem. And let me tell you something about Madison Avenue. It depends, dog. It depends. Park Avenue? Like the first time I came to New York and I was in Harlem and I was on Park Avenue and I thought it was like LA has Rodeo and Rodeo. I believe they are the same street on the map, but at one point it's Rodeo and somewhere along the way it turns into Rodeo. And that is what Park Avenue is like. Like you rolling like, I'm on Park. Yeah, I'm on Park. I thought you said we was on Park.
Nah, this ain't Monopoly, dog. That Crenshaw thing happened to me. First time I went to LA, I was like an adult. And it was like all my whole childhood, only Crenshaw references you get on the East Coast is like, yeah, Crenshaw is the hood. Like Moesha and like rap songs, like Crenshaw's the hood. And I go to LA as an adult. And I was like, oh, this Crenshaw? Like they gentrified this or I'm in the wrong part.
Yo, no. You just keep going. Ride it down a little bit more. I've taken some long trips on Crenshaw. Because like when I lived in California, I went to grad school and one of my partners, he was from Carson, which I've come to find some people refer to as Sea Arson. But he was from Carson. So like my introduction to LA was largely through him. And I won't say he'd have me any old where, because that wouldn't be fair. But he'd have me about anywhere because he would have me at the spots that he went to, right? And this, by the way, was well into my quote-unquote fame, where I'd go play. I went somewhere. I forget where we went to watch a game one time. I was like, yeah, man, I was with my man. We went down to this spot called the Savoy to watch the game. It was like, oh, damn, you was at the Savoy? Like, I get all the real dude points with like places people see me in L.A. because all my L.A. people, it's like Miami dudes ain't about to be taking you to Miami Beach. That's not how they live. That's not where they get down. That's what my L.A. experience can be. And don't let the manicured yards fool you, baby.
That I remember seeing Friday as a kid. I was like, hey, this neighborhood looks nice.
Because it's palm trees everywhere. That's what I'm saying. It's palm trees everywhere. Like, if you don't live in a place with palm trees, you take palm trees as a sign of glamour. And then you go to the places that have palm trees and you're like, no, it's like pine trees. They everywhere too.
Yeah, how you gonna be this angry and it's so beautiful outside? You got a lawn to play catch in and everything. Yeah, Boys in the Hood, you saw Ricky get gunned down in that beautiful lawn compared to like the cities on the or the bad neighbors on the East Coast. You will be searching if you're trying to find some grass.
Yeah, you know it right away. Like it ain't like New Orleans where there's no mystery. Like if you ain't supposed to be there in New Orleans, you were not supposed to be there. And yes, I know there was a mansion one block away. Totally get it. That mansion is a world away right now. Like this happened to me. I was in LA. This is when I was in school and we went to go pick up a dude. He is like a graduate of Crenshaw High School, right? And they're like, yo, we're going to go pick him up at his mama's place. But the thing about neighborhoods that some might think are bad or like on that line or whatever, if you are familiar with it, it don't hit you that same way. And you don't think about this when you got other people. So we were going to go to the UCLA Reggae Fest, where I saw Steven Seagal play guitar. Dog, we at the UCLA Reggae Fest, and there's this big old tall white dude playing guitar, and we're not thinking anything of it. And then out of nowhere on the microphone, give it up for Steven Seagal. And we're like, what? Because apparently that's what Steven Seagal does. He plays reggae guitar. But we went to go pick dude up, and like I was fairly conscious of like, you know, the rules, what you need to do. I'm wearing a gray t-shirt because I've been wearing gray, black, and white at that point in my life all the way because they scared us so much about the idea of gangs. Like, that was before I got to LA. I was like, this is what I'm doing. So I got a gray t-shirt, I got some khaki cargo pants on, and I got some gray shoes, but they had red laces, and they were like, nope, stay in the car. I'm like, what do you mean? They're like, the red looks like you trying to put the red in. I'm like, they came with the shoes. But I'm like, all right, I got you. So I stayed in the car. But the neighborhood looked nice, right? Like, it was palm trees, it was sunny, all of that stuff. Man, we went back there at night. Oh, no. And then my man had us waiting in the car for like 15 minutes. And I come to find out later that the house we was parked in front of in my car with out-of-state plates was the lab. And so he come and get in the car. I'm like, hey, man, you left me out here waiting too long. He's like, dog, I had to shave. You did not have to shave. Look at me. I did not shave. You wanted to shave. You should have shaved before I got here. But that neighborhood looked great at first. And then it looked like you a pimpin' chizzer. You got your block on fire. I know that's from a different city, but still.
I remember my rookie year in Denver. I was dating this woman, and she was like, we should go to Jazz at the Park. And I was like, all right, cool. That sounds nice. We do that. That's all right. We go to Jazz at the Park, and Jazz at the Park is not Jazz at the Park. That's just what they call it. There was jazz being played, I guess, but it was really just like the parking lot was full of like LA transports or whatever, just like the gang element. I picked her up, and this was back like in 05, I guess. The Izod's was real popping. I had a bright red Izod, like polo on.
No.
And it was... And we pulled up and parked, and to get to like the jazz part, we have to walk through the parking lot, and it's just all these like low ride, old school painted with guys sitting on the hoods and their colors. And I pulled in and parked, and I was like, man, I thought I was in Denver. Like, this felt like LA. And I was like, look, baby, we ain't gonna be able to do this, because you're gonna find something out. I don't know who you thought I was or what type of person you think I am or what I'm looking for, but you're gonna be real embarrassed if you think that I'm gonna go out here and scuffle with these fools. Like, it's too late. I already made it. I've already gotten past that point in my life where that was a possibility. I'm not going back. So we go to Fridays and have us a burger.
Dog, collection of LA dudes. Don't matter whether you in LA or not, man. The mores get picked up very, like, you, like I say, you had no reason to think that they was banging in Denver like that. Oh, but they are. They
not
are.
Not at Jazz at the Park.
You like, they everywhere.
I know that Denver has its neighborhoods. I know everyone has its neighborhoods. I think it was at Jazz at the Park.
But you know why I was at Jazz at the Park? This is something I got to explain to white people all the time that need to be understood, right? It's enough white people that when they have activities, they can segment them activities out based on what kind of white person you are. You go to spring break with white people, it's going to be college students, right? Because it's enough college students in the kick it. The biker rally, it's going to be the bikers, whatever it is. You go to Black Bike Week at Myrtle Beach, some people on bikes. But overall, it's just some stuff for all of us to do, because it ain't enough of us to just be breaking ourselves up into little groups. So Jazz at the Park, somebody told the homies that Jazz at the Park was cracking. Now the homies are coming to Jazz at the Park too. That's like Freaknik. Freaknik was for college students. I met people at Freaknik, but none of them went to college. If they did, they was in Atlanta.
The lore of Freaknik for, I guess I was probably middle school around that time, for a middle school kid in Baltimore. Man, that's, I never been, but at that time, there was nothing better in the world, no better place to be than Freaknik for a stupid little boy that I was. Was it as wonderful as I imagined when I was a child?
So I got to the last Freaknik, basically. 98 was the last Freaknik before it got shut down, because this is the history part that's important. So I want to say Freaknik started in 88 or somewhere around there. And the Atlanta University Center, DC Metro Club, just had a picnic in the park. Picnic, get your freak on. Freaknik, right? And then it got bigger and bigger, and more people started hearing about it. And what I don't know is how it became like a come from out of town phenomenon. But they said in 94, I forget the exact numbers, but the multiples on this are correct. I think they said that they were expecting like 50,000 people, and something like 200,000 people showed up. Like, it was some multiple of that in 94. So like all the videotapes and stuff in the barbershops, that's Freaknik 94 and Freaknik 95. And in 94, it is clear that they made the call, we were going to kill this within 5 years. Because another thing that had happened was, apparently, I think it was True Value, but some major corporation was having a shareholders meeting in Atlanta, and it happened to be the same weekend as Freaknik. And because Atlanta, rather than like embrace the fact that people coming in to spend this money and have some activities and stuff and the likes, They didn't do that. So like if you went to Daytona Beach, when they used to have the Black Beach down there, there was always a concert somewhere or whatever it is. Like they were trying to have things for you to do. Atlanta was just trying to figure out how to get y'all out of there. And so apparently 94, they killed it. 98, you would get on the freeway and they shut all the exits down. Like they wanted it where if you got on the freeway, next stop was wherever the hell you came from.
That is absurd.
Right, right. So 98 was kind of cracking. And then 99, I was like, I got a feeling I don't want to be here. And I left town. They said it was more cops than partiers.
Nah, those stories didn't make it to me. I just remember seeing those videos, tapes in the barbershop that you was talking about that get passed around my school. All the things that a boy going through puberty would think about all the time, they were on those tapes. And it was like, I need to get to Freaknik. I don't care that I'm 12 years old. I need to get there.
Oh, it drove enrollment up for us. The problem is now, if we go back and look at them tapes as adults, we like, damn, this is like wildly frightening and disrespectful to women in ways I had not considered. Like, I can't imagine how terrifying it had to be for women walking them gauntlets.
Yeah, I can't either. I'm reverting back to that self and thinking of how stupid I was and how exciting it was at the same time. But you are thinking clearly at that time, but fortunately never got to Freaknik because I'm not sure it would have turned out well. I know I ended up at Memorial Day weekend in Miami a couple times. That's the closest Freaknik experience I ever had. And I never liked it. The two times I went there, I was like, I don't like this. I'm too old or something. It's a little too wild for me. I ran into a bunch of people that I grew up with, though, which was weird.
Yo, let me tell you the best Freaknik story that I have ever heard. Gabe, play the music.
Thank you for your patience. A representative from the right time will be with you shortly. Your current hold time is
15 seconds.
Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's bachelorette bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
We can actually talk about the things that are going on in sports now. Did you check out this Trevor Lawrence article in Sports Illustrated?
I gotta be honest, I haven't read the article yet. I've heard the quotes and I've heard the conversation around it, but I haven't checked out the article yet.
Well, for people who don't know, like the quotes that are really going around is Trevor Lawrence talking about like he's not singularly focused on winning a Super Bowl. That seems to be the big one. I saw Warren Sharp made the point that, you know, imagine how this would go over if it was Justin Fields, which is correct. Like, I don't feel the need to do a what if on that kind of quote. But I did think that it was interesting that somebody as good as Trevor Lawrence and has accomplished as much as Trevor Lawrence didn't quite see it this way. And he does seem to be the guy that's like, I didn't try for good grades. I just got them. Like, I'm just here now.
The thing that is kind of interesting to me is because I'm of two minds of it. Like, I hear all the old school football people like saying you can't be great if you don't have that mindset. And my initial like response to that is to like kind of bristle at that a little bit. But then I think back to like the best seasons I had in my career. Like I was like near depression and maniacally focused in a way that was probably very unhealthy. But then I also think about people are different. And I'm sure that lots of people have had success in this league without being like this crazy chip on the shoulder person. They just know better than to say it because they know that y'all fools can't handle it. And they say things like, oh, I don't care about nothing more than winning. I love my team. I don't care about money or awards. And they actually are probably closer to well-rounded people than we would suspect.
Yeah. I don't think anybody's going to care, right? Like, this isn't going to have any sort of effect on anything about him and his career. He's obviously going to wind up being the number one overall pick. But I think it's a new generation sort of thing that he didn't even bother to care to lie to us, right? Because, like, Tom Brady, for example, he is maniacally focused on being the best football player that he can be. That's why he's still out here doing this at this age, even though there's nothing really left for him to accomplish. There are no lines on the resume for him to figure out, right? But he is maniacally focused on being the best football player that he can be. I think it's kind of wild that someone like Lawrence could be that good and not have that singular focus on being that dude. And I do also wonder this. Once he gets to the league, it's about to be harder than it's ever been. Right? It's going to be different than anything that he's ever done. Is that going to trigger something in him? Because I do think he probably likes being the best football player out there. Like, he likes people looking at him as Trevor Lawrence, and they're not going to look at him as Trevor Lawrence in that way if he's the fifth best quarterback in the league. That's going to require him to be the best. And even if he don't care that much about winning the Super Bowl, I bet he hates losing.
Yeah.
He's going to lose more in his first year than he's lost in the last 6 years of playing football.
But the question for me is, what is it that makes them great? And the people would say it's the amount of time they put in, how meticulous they are with the effort. It's not the maniacal focus, or it's not the insane chip that's on their shoulder. It's what that produces. It produces an amount of work ethic, an amount of commitment that people, I guess, believe is unnatural. Like, it's possible that Trevor Lawrence could put in all the hours and put in all the work because he loves it or because that's what he's always done and not have a chip on his shoulder. Like, that's the part that kind of grabs my attention and makes me think that it's possible that people have had success without being like this, and it's possible that he can have success this way. It's like, the point is getting the work done. The point isn't like the mindset necessarily.
So here's my question. Why would he have a chip on his shoulder?
I was going to use examples like Jordan, and like, he accomplished a bunch, and Brady obviously accomplished a bunch, but he still have a chip on his shoulder. But for both of them, the chip developed a lot younger, and you just are who you are and you just can never get rid of it. But you also hear those stories where it's like Jordan manufactured these beefs in order to like replace the chip on his shoulder after he had already kind of conquered the league, right?
Yeah, but like, so for example, I've talked about this before where I see people all the time where I look on Twitter and they'll be like, tell me about a time that somebody has underestimated you. And then people have these stories about this boss or this teacher or whatever it was. And I looked at it and I was like, damn, people be talking to y'all like that? I don't really think I've had this lengthy experience with people underestimating me. Like, even at this company.
That's not fair.
I'm just saying.
You're unique in that way. Like, in that some athletes are special. Like, there's something about you. Like, you were, like, skipping grades at, like, four or whatever.
But that's Trevor Lawrence. Like, that's my point. Yeah. Is that for Trevor Lawrence, I can't think of who the people were that were coming and telling. He's the number one overall recruit when he's in high school. He's winning state championships. They win a national championship his first year at Clemson.
Whoa. None of that matters. He's a 6'5", handsome white man with money and beautiful hair. Like, who cares about anything else?
Yeah, ain't nobody underestimating Trevor Lawrence. Like, maybe a point will come where he'll have to be like, damn, I had to show them what I was really made of. Think about it. In this draft, once we decided he was going to be the number one overall pick, we ain't done no breaking down a film on him, no looking. Because, look, there are some holes there, right? We saw his last two seasons end in ways that raise questions one would think about him. But no, nobody's underestimating Trevor Lawrence. So I appreciate him saying, no, that hasn't happened, as opposed to being like crazy Michael Jordan making shit up, right? Right? Like James Worthy said in The Last Dance. That was a great line. He said he thought he was the best player on the team at Carolina for 2 weeks. James Worthy was the National Player of the Year that year. And he saw Jordan and was like, yep, nope, that dude's better than me. And Michael Jordan's out here inventing things to overcome to give him that chip on his shoulder. And I'm like, nah. Like, I remember once I had lost my job at ESPN in 2007. And I was talking to somebody who's a pretty big deal in the game. And he was like, I know if I were you, I would be itching to get a job at Yahoo and show them what they're missing. And I was like, nah, not really. I don't really care. I don't care what they think. Like, I was really hurt that they let me go. You know, like, I cried about that and all that stuff, but I wouldn't think I'm trying to prove nothing to them. It's far healthier to just be like, nah, I like doing this and I'm going to be the best that I can at it.
Right. So then you should believe that this is not as damning for Trevor Lawrence
exactly.
as it is for anybody else. Because, like, you didn't have a chip on your shoulder. No one's ever doubted you. And somehow you still find a way.
Right. That's what I'm
saying. The motivation to work really hard.
Well, I'm just curious, though, what it will be once somebody challenges the idea of Trevor Lawrence, which just hasn't been challenged before. So like once he gets out here and he starts taking these blows, I am curious how ego is going to play a role in that, because hey, you've been the best quarterback in college football the second he showed up, So what's it going to be for him when he gets to this place and for the first time since maybe he was a freshman in high school, he's not the best?
You said that when people talking about people doubt them, you're like, you let people talk to you like that. So at no,
no
point.
No. It wasn't you let people talk to you like that. I think some of those stories are made up.
Okay.
You know, like, you know, this goes out to the teachers who told me I would never amount to nothing. Y'all got teachers like that? Like I've seen some teachers be mean to kids before. Some of them I do think are lying. Not everybody is lying. Nah.
I had a high school teacher who told me the first scholarship offer I got was my junior year from Duke. And she was a girls basketball coach. And she was like my social studies teacher. And she was like, you better take that scholarship. Like, you're not going to get no other offers. You're not going to get into some other school. Like, she was doubting me in a way that she thought was helpful. She was like, yeah, NFL, that's never going to happen. Like, we know Duke, at this time, Duke sucked at football. She's like, you better go down there and get that Duke degree. And I was like, offended. Like, what?
Yeah, that's why.
Get out of my face. But she thought she was coming from a good place. She was like, I'm going to help him out before Duke changed their mind.
Yeah, and to be fair, right, on that one, I think that if it had been Bowie State that had come in and give you that first offer, it sounds like she saw Duke in her eyes and was like, go get that because the NFL is not necessarily going to happen or whatever. But no, I don't have the experience with people telling me that I wasn't going to be this or I wasn't going to be that. Like, I hear it and it just is a little bit surprising to me. Like, that's not what drives me. But I think for a lot of people, they can't relate to the idea of doing these things for you or like internal motivation. They are looking for the motivation to come from somewhere outside. And so that's where, again, with Lawrence, if suddenly not everybody's telling you that you Trevor Lawrence in the way that it meant before, how does it then land with you? I'm not even saying it as a, I don't know if he can take it. I'm just legitimately curious. Is it going to be, I got to show these people I'm Trevor Lawrence, or man, I've got to get better at this. And so I now am going to get better at this. Like a dude like Clowney. I was talking to somebody about Jadeveon Clowney. And apparently he has told people privately, I did not put in enough work to improve my craft because he is the most physically amazing defensive player that I could think of. And so he's just out here over, like Khalil Mack got that long arm move and all that stuff. Clowney got this me, you know, not that he doesn't work hard, but there's a level to like working on his craft that he didn't get on and like developing pass rush moves and all that stuff. And he got to the league and he couldn't do it like he could do it before, but that still didn't make him decide, okay, well, now I got to get my hands right and all of that stuff. It just didn't move him in that way. And so with Lawrence, if he gets in there and he's not the dude that he thought he was, I'm just curious to see what's going to be the thing to make him decide that he wants to get better. Is it for us or is it for himself? And I think it's obviously better if it's for yourself.
Yeah, it's better, it's healthier, and it probably lasts longer. It's probably very difficult to continue to find ways to motivate yourself. But it's also possible that, to my original point, is that he's doing the work. He doesn't need to change the mentality.
Right.
It might be possible that he's doing the work to be successful. He might be just dumb enough or arrogant enough to tell us the truth that so many other players have been afraid to tell us. It's like, no, I don't live or die by this. Like, the idea that someone is crazy focused on their craft suggest that they don't do anything else. Like, nah, Tom Brady out here starting companies. He out here, you know, like, he out here raising kids. He out here putting out the occasional funny tweet. Like, like, you can be focused and work hard. I mean, you kind of have to take a break to like sleep and poop and eat every now and then.
Yes. Yeah. I think a lot of folks believe that the way they are wired is how people are wired. I am a person, therefore, people are wired as such. And so for the folks who are wired to always like challenge every slight or whatever it is, not everybody like that.
Yeah.
And he's not that dude. I also make the point, some of y'all that's been doubted by all these people, who are you to not be doubted?
I was thinking that early on is like, to be honest, all these teachers that are doubting people, they right more than they're wrong.
They got a lot of experience, right? they have had plenty of time to evaluate who should or should not be doubted. They could probably pick this out with y'all about a third day of school, right? No, like most of us should be doubted. None of us are unassailable. There are doubts to have about me. Like, I went and plunked out of grad school. Nobody ever thought that that would happen. But there were reasons to have doubts. Like, once it happened, I could point back and be like, yeah, you never noticed that I didn't work very hard. You never noticed that I didn't do all, you know, do insert thing here. Like, there were reasons to doubt. Most of y'all, it's so arrogant to believe that nobody should doubt you. That, you know, somebody said that I couldn't do it, and I took that personally. Why? Why? You took it personally because you don't know if you can do it. Like, you ain't fighting against that person. You quietly fighting against yourself, but you mad at them for saying the same stuff that you saying in your own head about yourself, right? And then as I've gotten older, like, in the industry that I work in, it is possible for you to think the world of me and still not think the same about me that I think about myself. You know, that's how it goes. You can think that. And I just really chalk that up to a difference of opinion.
Yeah.
Right? You don't think I can do that? Okay, well, you know, we'll see. You might be right. I don't know.
I mean, I can't get past the idea that there's some sixth grade teacher who's telling all the kids, like, yeah, you really ain't going to be nothing.
Right!
I decided to be a teacher. I put all my time and effort into coming in here for y'all. Like, I had other options. Only so I could find the kids that I know ain't going to be shit and tell them for their little dirty faces.
Right, what's this going? How's this going to help you? How's this going? Because I'm assuming that if you're at the point where you Biggie Smalls' teacher and you telling him that, right? Now, granted, she was probably telling him that mostly because she's like, son, you smell like weed, right? Like that was probably something in line with that.
I would guess, like, in defense of the teachers, I would guess that they're like, I tried having an after-school like meeting with him. Like, I tried calling his dad and his mom. I tried giving him some easier work. I tried giving him some harder work. You know what? You just ain't gonna be nothing. Like, you just, this is my last try, is I'm gonna try to shock you into getting your life together. I'm gonna tell you that you are gonna fail. And to be fair, I guarantee you that if the teachers tell at the 10 kids, nine of them do become failures. Like, they know, they got experience. They got thousands of kids that they have watched and they keep up with. Thousands of kids been through that room, and they know the kids that's gonna make it and the kids that's
not. Because you know what? This happens as you get older. And I'm sure you've been at this place where you meet somebody and you're like, nah, I met that dude before.
Oh, yeah.
Right? He had a different name, but I don't know. No, I know this dude and I know exactly how it's going to go. So, like, I went to grad school with a dude and we very, very close now. We've come a long way in our time. But he was on the kick of, I'm going to try to get this money. And then once I get this money, now I'm going to be able to do for the community. Now, he's a teacher now. Like, he really, like, all the big money, he got off that kick. He's a teacher now doing a lot of great work with kids and all that stuff. But when his kick was, I'm trying to get all this money so that I can do for the community, I was like, nah, you just trying to get all this money. And I remember it was like 6-7 years later, I met a dude who went to Duke. And he was on that steez. And I was like, nope, met you before. Met you, and I was right. He was exactly as it was. And you're right. These teachers, they've met you before.
Yeah, that's the Hove line, right? He's, I'm going to get rich and get back. Yeah. Now, that's a win-win.
Yeah. See, he's the great example on that. I'm like, man, you just trying to get this money.
Yeah. So I guess it's probably different for different people, but if it's just a facade that you lie to people so you look different, or you lie to yourself so you feel better about it, or if it's like when your daddy was standing on that balcony, it was like, they done got a taste of it. They're like, you know what?
Yes.
I'm not going to give none of this back because I love this life.
What you think about, do you see this thing with Jason Tatum saying he got to take an inhaler before every game after he had COVID?
Yeah, I saw that. And that is terrifying. Back when this was new and we weren't sure about it, and we were talking about the college athletes mostly and the professional athletes, the thing that kept ringing out in my mind was, we have no idea. You know what I mean? Like, everyone was like, it doesn't happen. The younger people aren't affected by this as much. And they're like, it's okay, blah, blah. You get it. You beat it and then you're fine. All I kept thinking, particularly about the college athletes, is like, we have no idea how this is going to impact them going forward. It seems like it's not worth the risk for them necessarily. And now we're starting to see it's not even like distant future. We're seeing that it has some lasting impact on some of the healthiest people we've had.
So the thing that got me was, when people have COVID in sports, we put them on a list, they come back, and we don't think about it ever again. And I said, when this whole thing first got cracking, I was like, well, the NFL needs to be worried about the future of your league. Catch COVID, ain't never the same. Like, Patrick Mahomes gets COVID, never the same. That is entirely possible that this sort of thing could happen. It's a fair question about Cam Newton. And Cam Newton, the stuff he was talking about. I know of one player who said that when he had COVID, he couldn't open his eyes for 5 days. you know, there's all the people out there always, well, it only happens to a small percentage of people. Okay, that percentage don't seem so small when it's you. That percentage won't seem so small when it's somebody that you know. I got a partner that just had to fight it, and it was doing things to him that I didn't even know it did to people. Like, I was learning new things about it, and, you know, and all this stuff. And I just think, like, as sports fans, we're typically sociopaths about these things. And as athletes, and I've talked about this before, athletes are conditioned to tough it out through anything. Like, this is just another thing to play through. Like, when people didn't understand why it was that football players would try to play through concussions, because they play through everything else. The game is, if you can, you do. And then we go from there. And I just feel like a lot of these dudes, and with this new generation, these younger folks are more likely to be honest about these things. We're going to hear some stories about some dudes who've been really overcoming some serious stuff just to get on the floor, just to get out there.
That pressure. Now, I haven't played any other sports at that level, but it feels unique to football. Like, if you look at other sports, like, you see baseball players taking a couple days off, and you see basketball players resting, DNPs, like, they happen. Load management was a whole thing. Just not the same in football because of the amount of games and just the general culture, like militaristic almost culture in football, that you see that happen. That's why you're like, these concussions, like, I don't understand how people don't understand why people want to play through concussions. Like, that's one of the few injuries that it seems like you can play through, because you're impaired somewhat mentally. So maybe you aren't reasoning very well. And you're like, you know what? I know my name. I can think. I can catch. My hands work. My feet work. Like, the things that I need work. Like, that is the most obvious thing. And the same thing is probably true for these COVID infections. Once they recover, it's like, yeah, I'm going to keep going. And I'm going to expect that everything returns back to normal, because it always does.
Right. And now we here with something that's like, nah, what normal mean? You know, what normal is? I don't know what normal is anymore. I've completely forgotten about this. And now we out here. It's starting to feel endless, man.
Yeah, it does. And especially because we can't, in some places, obviously, they've been more diligent and have seemed to keep it out. But the fact that the strains keep changing, like, it could get back into those places, like, it's terrifying.
By the way, not to give the game away for people, because we typically record these on Thursdays and you get them on Friday, LaMarcus Aldridge just retired.
Thank you for your patience. A representative from the right time will be with you shortly. Your current hold time is
15 seconds.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, you just missed out on something really fascinating that just happened on the podcast. Like, while we were doing the podcast, the word came across that LaMarcus Aldridge had retired. And man, I was going on about how he tall man, not big man. Glenn Davis did it to him in college. The last game, Andre Drummond did it to him. And man, it was hilarious. And then it turned out he had an irregular heartbeat. And my bad, dog. Whew, I'm glad this wasn't all live.
Oh, God.
Can you imagine if this was live radio?
I mean, people forgive you if it was live.
Maybe, because then they harvest it. Like, something that's always scared me. This happened once. You can look it up. I just don't feel like making a thing of it by putting the guy's name in. But a gentleman who is a very significant figure in sports journalism was doing a radio show, and former NBA player Eddie Johnson had gotten busted. I think it was for, like, untoward behavior with a minor or something like that. And the dude kept going on and on and on about Eddie Johnson and what kind of, you know, I thought he was this, but it turns out he was that, you know, like that kind of thing, on and on. Except somebody had reported it, and it was the wrong Eddie Johnson. I think you probably know the Eddie Johnson I'm thinking of. The Eddie Johnson used to play for the Suns, you know, play for those. It wasn't him. It was this other Eddie Johnson. And so imagine you was all talking about it as though you were talking about the Eddie Johnson that people know, but it turned out to be the other Eddie Johnson, because that's my biggest fear in the world right there. Yeah. What he was saying would have been right if he was talking about the right dude. And it's not like, you know, it's not like he wasn't diligent on his research or something like that. He just thought we would talk. It ain't even like the Jason Williams thing, when there's somebody, when we had like three Jason Williamses running around and we were like, yo, you had to be like, which one? Does it have a Y? Okay. Is he black? Oh, okay, cool. It's the white one. got it, right? Like, we had a chain of things. Eddie Johnson, I just thought it was Eddie Johnson. I didn't know about the other Eddie Johnson until that.
If I'm being naive to think, because my assumption is that people would understand and they'd be like, nah, it's no big deal, but you're right.
They looking for it now, especially in this day and age. You know how many people wake up every day hoping I do something like that? Every day. Like, my people would have my back.
Yeah, right.
That's right. But the people. Ooh, yeah. That one would kind of depend.
So you still got the Nets winning the championship?
And here's the thing about it, though. The truth is, it'd be so callous, but that's our job.
Yeah, I know.
I mentioned the Jason Tatum thing on Twitter. And by the way, the bots are all over telling you that COVID ain't real or COVID ain't no big deal. Like, all the class of 2020 on Twitter, the class of 2021, you know what I'm talking about? Them accounts that just got started. Yep. They all about that. They jumped on it quick. But I had somebody hit me up and was like, well, if it takes a basketball player being on an inhaler to make people take this seriously, they're not going to take it seriously. And I was like, I ain't trying to make people take this seriously. I'm giving you sports analysis right now. I'm just trying to help you understand that when these dudes have COVID, maybe you need to think about some other things. This might help you with your gambling. I wasn't out here trying to save nobody's soul. I was out here actually sticking to sports, doing my job, you know?
I mean, to your point, the idea that we could be costing ourselves great players and great moments and great future stuff is like kind of a thing. And like, the obviously the health concerns are important, but like, to think that Jason Tatum potentially could never reach his full potential because of this, like, it really sucks. And to think that there are players whose name that we don't even know right now, who are in high school or in college, that from a financial standpoint, these are, like, as uncomfortable as it is for us to say, these are the assets on which these industries are built. And diminishing your assets for like short-term gain over the long-term health of your business doesn't seem right to me.
Yo, look, man, and there's nothing wrong with you thinking that this thing is worse than it actually is, right? So I'm gonna give you an example. Polio. Polio was a thing, man. You know what I'm saying? Like, polio had everybody out here shook in these streets. I was well into adulthood before I actually understood like what polio did and what polio came with, because I could really only point to one person that I could think of who had polio. And that was FDR, who was in a wheelchair. I thought polio put you in the wheelchair. I'm like, hell yeah, sign me up for that vaccine. Look, take that as a shot. If people thought that COVID would put you in a wheelchair, I bet people wouldn't be out here fighting this vaccine. They'd be out here doing this. No, I want to hear all the horror stories about what it is, because this one in particular, it could be so many different things. But now bring that information on to me. Like, I would have never taken polio seriously if you told me it just came with, per the CDC, sore throat, fever, tiredness, nausea, headache, and stomach pain. That sound like COVID, except polio shut the world down. But these fools out here don't want to take no shot. Like, seriously, this is also on polio, because I'm telling you, I know y'all don't know what polio is. I mean, anyway, a smaller proportion of people with the polio virus infection will develop other more serious symptoms that affect the brain and spinal cord: paresthesia, meningitis, and paralysis. So like, that's the next step up on what the polio can do for you. But I bet you the way people like, well, most people is just a cold and then they keep it going, probably could have said that about polio.
Yeah. I was just Googling to see if LaMarcus Aldridge, which would be irresponsible of me to just make that leap, but I know that there are cardiac issues connected with it. So I was just Googling to see if LaMarcus Aldridge ever tested positive. I did not see that.
It's more responsible for you to Google that than it is for me, every time I see a bad play at the end of the game, to Google the odds on it to see if the referees are shaving points. And sometimes the results are inconclusive. Yeah. I actually thought that you were saying that you were Googling to see if LaMarcus Aldridge had polio. And on that note, ladies and gentlemen, I was about to say, man, like, did LaMarcus Aldridge get polio? You never know. It happened. I was in college and this girl told me her ex-boyfriend's daddy had polio. And I had no idea polio was still in the league. I thought that we had taken care of that one.
That's crazy. Like, I know we didn't grow up around polio, so we may have a different context for it. It's just a shot that we take when we were little kids. But think about how devastating that must be, to be decades later, we still taking shots to make sure that it don't come back.
Yes.
Like, how devastating must polio be that we got vestigial drugs that are going around? You can't go to school without getting a polio shot. Like, that is, I didn't live through it, but it feels like it must have been a monster. And it got the president.
We ain't never letting it come back. But like we are keeping our foot on polio's neck. And these fools don't want to take a shot that's out here stopping people you know from dying. But polio, we are not letting polio get back up. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for joining us here on The Right Time. This is Foxword Fridays. Dominique Foxword, check him out at theundefeated.com. Who knew that we would end on such a raucous note on polio? Gabe Massey and Tony Collette, you handled everything behind the scenes. Thank you, guys. Remember, follow The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. We'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.